Thank you. This is the Monday, May 9th meeting of the YOLO 2022. You have the meeting of the YOLO County Transportation District Board of Directors. We're calling this meeting to order. Mimi, would you call roll and determine a quorum, please?
Yes. City of Woodland? Absent. City of Davis?
I'm here.
City of West Sacramento?
Here.
City of Winters?
Here.
In YOLO County?
Here.
And UC Davis?
Here.
And Caltrans representative?
Here.
Okay, we have quorum.
So this meeting we're in a moment, we're going to approve a consent calendar item that includes a resolution authorizing remote and hybrid teleconference meetings. Initially, we had scheduled this meeting as our first hybrid meeting. We, as it turns out, no member of the board is in the board chambers, and that's due to a number of individual circumstances. So we will conduct the meeting primarily remotely, but we do have at least one member of the public who is present in the board chambers and will be afforded the opportunity to speak in public comment. We will want to make a note that item 4 has an administrative report. One of the topics in that item is a report on the ad hoc committee on the 80 managed lane project. That topic shows up again under item 6. And so I think we'll simply put that topic, that ad hoc report will be combined with item 6, and we'll let that all come up one time in the meeting. With that, we will open, I think, hope we're ready to open to public comment on items on not on the agenda or any item within the consent agenda before we take a motion on the consent calendar. Now, is there any member of the public who would like to address the board of YCTD on matters not on the agenda, but within our purview, or items on the consent calendar? I see one hand raised.
Yes, and we did receive a written comment from Mr. Hirsch he sent over some slides that I sent over to the board members, and it was regarding slides on the I-80 study options.
Well, thank you. So we'll, after we take the public comment, then we'll hear if there are any other written comments on general matters. Is there, so we have one person in public comment?
Yes, we do.
Okay. And is our general custom, is it 2 minutes for a public comment?
3 minutes.
3 minutes. All right. Very good. So who is the speaker?
Go ahead.
Okay, if the speaker is ready, we're ready to listen.
I believe.
Is there a problem with the technology of some sort?
Can you hear me now?
Yes, we can.
Yes.
Very good. Thank you very much. I sent a slide. I gave a slide to the gentleman here, and he obviously didn't get into board, so I showed up with some slides. I'm concerned that basically that the I-80 project should be as lawsuit proof as possible and also public comment as possible. And I'm concerned that basically we are setting up a situation where we have probably is problematic. I know we're in a hybrid situation. I know we're experimenting, but we've been doing Zoom meetings for 2 years now. And I believe under the Brown Act, members of the public have a right to face the public, face the board. And basically that means gallery view. That's possible. We should be able to figure that out at this point, especially in public. So I can't see who's in the meeting. I can't see who's attending and who isn't. I don't know who the staff is. So that's an issue. The meetings are questionable. But also, you need to be able to make visual material available. That's what the League of California Cities says. Some cities have figured it out. I don't understand why you haven't done that. With the Board of Supervisors your county Board of Supervisors has something that says only 7% of all communication is written. So you basically are excluding me from 93% of the communication by not allowing me to present visuals. I don't think that's an equal playing field with other commenters. So I think that's questionable. And also material presented to the board needs to be made available concurrently or in advance. And my material has not been incorporated in materials in the concurrently or in advance. And that's an issue. I would suggest you need to investigate how to fully engage the public in the public input. Not, you need to increase it 3 minutes, but that 3 minutes should be as quality as possible. That improves your discourse, gets new information out there, and the whole community gets to be involved with the dialogue, not just those who are in the inside. Civil society is being threatened by public commentators who are questioning the legitimacy of our government. We know we've had Proud Boys in certain areas here. We need to have robust, strong rules of engagement that treats everyone fairly. And I'm suggesting that we have some work to do here. Thank you very much for listening. Thank you for all your hard work and your essentially volunteer work for a lot of you guys. Thank you very much.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Hirsch. Are there any other members of the public who'd like to talk to us about the items on the consent calendar or other topics not on our agenda? I don't hear anyone. Mimi, at this point, have we received written comments on matters not on our agenda or pertaining to the consent calendar?
We have not.
Okay. We did receive an email from Mr. Hirsch himself at some point late afternoon. All right, very good. That brings us then to item two. Do you have anything to remove from the consent calendar, Autumn?
No, Mr. Chair.
I guess it's item three. Anybody else have anything you'd like to bring off the consent agenda? Is there a motion to approve the consent calendar as presented?
Adesso moves.
Second, by Ferrix.
Thank you. We have a motion from Ledesma and a second from Ferrix. Is there any further discussion? Mimi, would you call roll on the consent agenda?
Yes. Yolo County?
Aye.
City of Davis?
Aye.
City of West Sacramento?
Aye.
City of Winters?
Aye.
City of Woodland? Absent. And the motion passed.
Okay, very good. That brings us to item four, administrative reports from our executive officer, executive director.
Thank you.
Go ahead.
I was going to suggest that Mimi share the slides, but if we have board member reports, we should do those first. I jumped the gun.
All right. Let's start with board member reports. Mr. Ferrix, you have a comment.
Yeah, just a quick question, Mr. Chair. I don't know if it's just me or if others are hearing, there's a fair amount of like background or feedback noise. I mean, are people hearing like, it sounds like there's an additional conversation happening or I'm not sure. And it looks like most folks are on mute, but just quite curious about that. So sorry, it's a little difficult.
I'll take care of that. I understand what it is. I'll take care of it.
Thanks.
Any other board reports? Yes, Matt.
Yes, Mr. Chair, thank you. And to everyone, I did want to share the news that I partially shared last week. As many of you know, I'll be transitioning to a new position with UC Davis and working mostly at the Sacramento campus, helping to lead a lot of the planning and new initiatives that are really generating a lot of excitement in the region and particularly on the Sacramento campus there. So I'm excited to make that transition. We all know that Yolo Bus, YCTD, has long had a UC Davis board member able to participate and represent UC Davis and help advance transportation in Yolo County, and I know that will continue. I'm going to continue for a few more meetings and hopefully better define that at our June meeting. And look forward to working with all of you in the next few months and hopefully in other initiatives on into the future. So I did want to share that. And I'm sure with my departure, we'll find a replacement for that continued representation at the YCTD meeting. But thank you all.
Well, we have to vote on this, I think, before. Congratulations, Matt. That's very exciting and good news for you. We wish you all the best. We're delighted with your continued participation here, as long as that fits with your new role. So thank you very much for all the work you've done for this agency, for our region, and so many different circumstances. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
We'll give you cookies next time. Now, Jesse, I think you had your hand up as well.
Yeah, if you weren't going to say anything, I was going to say that all the directors that are here tonight and Tom were present for Cap to Cap, advocating for transportation in the region. And some of us were able to do the SACOG tour ahead of time, looking at housing and really best practices for our communities. But I feel like it was a great event, and our executive director was there leading, and I felt like I was part of a bigger team than I've ever been on, and I really appreciate it. So I think it was great for all of us.
Thank you for sharing. Couldn't agree more on all fronts. Any other board member reports? Let's go to TransDev report then. Michael, do you have anything to share with us?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yeah, yes, actually still going positive. We're right on track as we'd planned to date. We got very nice. We actually have one started that left us less than a year ago for better wages, has decided to come back. Very excited. And we have another one scheduled for next month, and we're talking to a few more coming back, along with who we actually have in training now. We just started a new class today as well with four trainees in that class. So very, very good so far.
Very good. Thank you. Now, Autumn.
Okay, great. If Mimi, you want to go ahead and share this slide deck, we'll just wanted to quickly share the long-range calendar, which we are continuing to update every month. And also just wanted to make a note. So, so I won't go through this in detail. You do have the rest through the end of the calendar year in the packet. But just wanted to note a couple things for the June agenda. One of the consent calendar items, I think we've told you in advance, but just wanted to make sure everyone was aware, is moving the June meeting to, let's go back to that calendar if we can. Oh, sorry to confuse you, Mimi. I threw you off. But for the long-range calendar, the meeting is moving to June 6th. It was June 13th. It's going to be June 6th instead. And there is no longer an August board meeting. We are have taken that direction to have a month off. So we've shifted some things around to reflect that. And again, as always, welcome your suggestions for items that you'd like to see in the long-range calendar. And then I'll just note that there are also meetings, notes from the Citizens Advisory Committee and Technical Advisory Committee, most recent meetings in your packet as well. And I think that's all we have as far as administrative reports, Mr. Chair.
Thank you very much. Colleagues, are there any questions regarding the Executive Director's report? I don't see any hands raised, so that brings us to item 5. Which is the draft 2022-23 budget for our organization. Autumn, is that you or is Mr. Levinson going to be?
Mr. Levinson is going to kick us off, and I may add a bit at the end. Over to you, Leo.
Thank you, Autumn and Chair Saylor and members of the board. I'm excited to have this chance to hear from you on the draft budget. It was shared with you and the Technical Advisory Committee on April 29th. And as you can see, after today's discussion, we're hoping for any written comments that you might have to come to us by May 30th so that we can be ready to incorporate them for the June 6th board meeting where we need to have or we hope to have action according to our bylaws. We need to have a budget by June 30th. It's allowed to be a preliminary budget, so it could be approved as preliminary with a final to come afterwards, or as I think has been the custom, it could be approved as final at that June meeting. And of course, there can be supplements to the budget during the year afterwards. But in either case, we hope to have action at the June 6th board meeting. The next slide, please, Mimi. So some of the highlights in the budget, which were mentioned in the staff report, it includes the Route 42 expansion to 30-minute headways, the Woodland Microtransit Service launch now for January 2023, continued restoration of express services, new multimodal projects, and these I know have been talked about at many other forums, but the YOLO Active Corridors project and advisory services supporting the I-80 Managed Lanes project. In terms of staffing, there is one new FTE proposed for the considerable planning efforts that are that need to be done, as well as a professional services budget. And this would be to support the short-range transit plan, the 10-year capital improvement plan, and the zero-emission fleet conversion plan, which are very important priorities for the district. And one of the goals of this operating budget was to continue to move towards with sustainability, so it reduces reliance on one-time sources as we balance this operating budget. The next slide. So I'm just going to cover a couple of highlights here and then open up to discussion, not go through the budget line by line. But overall, this is a $22 million budget, which is comprised of the operating budget of $17 million, which is up 3% from the current year, and $5 million in project budgets, which is down 4% from the budget proposed in the current year. It includes carrying forward many budgets that were in fact in the current year but have not started yet, but are displayed in this budget in order to show really the work plan that is before us. So combined, that's $22 million. In terms of the TDA, STA, State Transit Assistance and Local Transportation Fund funding from our jurisdictions, the total funding is $8.6 million, which is a 21% increase over the current fiscal year. It leaves, I know this is of interest, it leaves $9 million retained by jurisdictions of the Local Transportation Fund, which itself is an increase, a 16% increase over the current fiscal year. And the way that we approached the sizing of this, and of course this is subject to board discussion and review, is that the Local Transportation Fund is shared so that there's a sharing of the growth in the allocation that was received this year. So that each jurisdiction's growth and their share of the local transportation fund is made equal to its allocation growth percentage. And that can be seen in the table in the budget where those are displayed. Next slide, please. Something new this year. I don't believe there was a budget resolution last year, but for sort of full clarity about the terms of the budget and what's being approved, we are proposing to have a budget resolution that accompanies the budget. And this, we wanted to put this draft before you this time so there really is a chance if there's any questions about it. The resolution would approve the budget, and it can be approved, as I mentioned, as either preliminary or as final. It authorizes the cost of living adjustment in the budget, which is pursuant to the formula that was approved by the board during this last year in the personnel policies. It approves the additional FTE. It authorizes the deposit to maintain the general reserve funding target. And because we've already deposited to meet the current year budget over $4 million, it only requires the additional $112,000 to stay at the 25% and fully meet the 25% funding target for the general reserve. We take advantage of this resolution to provide some documentation for SACOG that the board is authorizing the use of state transit assistance funds that have been accumulated for capital purposes. And this clarifies that these funds are authorized to be used toward the projects, eligible projects that are listed in the budget. So that's the primary source of the local share of the capital projects identified in the budget table 2.1. It authorizes the executive director to move funds within the approved budget, provided that the operating and project budget expenditures and staff FTE do not exceed the amounts authorized by the board. And it makes it clear that we will be providing regular status reports to the board, which in case there was a sudden change in economic circumstances and the budget was no longer balanced, that would be the time when we would be, as the resolution says more specifically, we would be proposing how to rebalance the budget. But we would be reporting on the status at those times. Those dates could be changed at the will of the board or the chair of the board. So next slide, please.
So I think I'll jump in here. Yeah, did you want me to do this, Leo?
Sure. Yes, thanks.
Okay. Sure. So, so as you know, a major foundation of the budget is the service plan. In other words, what is the transit service we are planning to provide? And so we have received some feedback over the last month or so as we've been putting this together around some potential changes to the service plan that we wanted to just show you that we are wrestling with, and I'll give you the opportunity to share some feedback as part of this discussion tonight. So the first, and this is something we actually built in, is a contingency around the Route 42. So as you know, we are planning to launch 30-minute headways on the Route 42. As we've kind of unpacked that and looked at what that means, we've found that there's some challenges around the way that the Route 42 would change, particularly related to having some very long layovers for people traveling between Davis and Woodland. And so we are currently actually bringing in some outside expert assistance to help us look at the scheduling for this new Route 42 to try to see if we can correct that. And wanted to build in some contingency to the budget to make sure that we had, if we needed to increase the number of buses or make some other changes, that we had some flexibility to make sure that we're able to have that continuous high-quality service on 30-minute headways. So I'm happy to share more details, but don't want to bore you with them. but that's what that is currently built into the budget, and wanted to kind of flag that $400,000 for you. The second item is around the Woodland Local Service, the 211 and 212. The way we had designed this budget, we would be eliminating that service when the micro transit begins. It was brought to our attention that is not, in fact, what was approved in the comprehensive operational assessment. What the COA approved was to actually maintain these two routes, the 211 and 212, and eliminate two other routes in Woodland. So there was a total of four local routes. The COA called for eliminating two, retaining two, and then launching micro transit. So this budget had eliminated all four. We've already eliminated two. It was going to eliminate the remaining two in lieu of micro transit. We've received some feedback that we might want to consider keeping those two routes in addition to the micro transit service. So that's what that second bullet point is about. And that would cost an additional $260,000, we estimate, if we were to do that. Excuse me. And the third is the Route 44, which is the South Davis Express to Sacramento. This is one of the express buses that we had eliminated. It was one of the lower performing routes that we had eliminated as part of the COA. We've received some feedback from the Citizens Advisory Committee that because when we update the Route 42, we won't be serving South Davis anymore at all. There'll be no YOLO bus stops in South Davis once the routing on the 42 changes. And there was a suggestion that we could potentially bring back the Route 44, which is an express trip from South Davis to downtown Sacramento. And so that was incorporated as an option into this budget. And so, again, it's out of step with what was in the COA. So if we were to eliminate that from the budget, that would be $150. And I'm just to clarify, not asking you to make decisions about this right now. This is for the purpose of the budget. All of these, any service changes we would make would come to the board, would have a public hearing, opportunity for notice, but wanted to have you understand that as we're thinking about the budget, we made these assumptions about service planning. And so the dollar amount that's in there, these are some of the variables that are outstanding that as we go through the kind of planning processes that are underway could change what our service looks like. So with that, we'll open it up to discussion and questions.
Thank you, Autumn and Leo. So the process we'll follow is we'll first hear questions from members of the board, and then we'll hear public comment. So first, and questions and any brief comments before, I think, and just one clarity, this is not for action tonight. This is a preview. If any board member or all the board has some direction or questions they'd like to pursue, this will come back to us one more time before it goes out.
That's correct.
Okay, very good. Are there any questions from members of the board? Okay, I'm not seeing one. I do have one question that I can raise, and that's on the topic. I do appreciate the resolution, Leo. I think that is very good business practice to have an actual adoption of a resolution by the board that says what the budget is and makes it clear what we're doing. I'll save my question because it looks like we have a couple of board members. So we'll start with Matt and then Chris.
Great. Thank you, Chair Saylor. My question was on the resolution and the bullet item that has to do with the executive director's authority to revise budget amounts. And just asking as a general governance question about kind of the boundaries on that. And I think there's probably policies that have to do with what the director can and cannot do, but can you give us some idea of how much flexibility that gives and whether there should be a report out requirement back to the board about those kind of adjustments?
Sure. The constraints on it is that it would not allow increasing the budget. So it would only allow moving budget between line items, and it would require a report to the board at which there would be a status report, such as the status report presented today in consent agenda, that shows also the question of whether revenues are sufficient to keep covering the budget, because you might not even want to shift. You may need to reduce budget if you have reduced revenues for the year, but that would be reflected in those quarterly budget status reports. The way it's written, it doesn't have other constraints. That is a policy question for the board as to whether you'd like to bound it more tightly. I'll just leave it there. I think it's.
That's great. Thank you.
I think that was actually going to be my question as well, Matt. So, Chris, your shot.
Thank you. And first of all, Matt, congratulations. I didn't get a chance to verbalize that, but congratulations. Mm-hmm. Good to see everybody. So I guess my question, could you walk me through a little bit? I didn't spend a whole lot of time on the budget, but I'm trying to understand the allocation of STA dollars back to the jurisdictions. And I'm not sure if you can share, look at the table that you referenced and trying to understand really how you determine the percentages going back to each jurisdiction.
Sure. Mimi, do you want to, I don't know if you're able to share, but in the packet, in the budget, this is table,
is it 1C?
1.1C.
Yeah.
So are you able to share that, Mimi?
I think it's page 38 of the board packet.
Got it. You were there. Up a little.
Oh, I misspoke. It was page 36. Yeah.
There it is.
Here we go. Yes.
Perfect.
So if we were to take Davis as an example, the first one of the groupings, and this shows the current year budget, 2021-22, and the proposed 2022-23. And in that, you can see that the state transit assistance for Davis rose by 29.9%, and that's really designated for transit. The local transportation fund, which is the second line, rose by 15.8%. I think that is, if I'm reading the small numbers correctly. And so you can see that the bottom is the balance retained by the jurisdiction. There is an allocation for the different aspects of the service, and the amount left over after what's been allocated to the district also went up by 15.8% from the 2.4 million to the 2.8 million. And so the sort of policy concept is that the transit assistance really is intended specifically for district activities transit. The local transportation fund can be used for other things. So it was that increase that was used as the metric for the increase in the amount retained by the jurisdiction. And that's that follows for each jurisdiction. There's some difference in the percentage increases, but in each case, the amount retained grows by the same amount as the local transportation fund. And I can see there's a little, in each case, the first line at the top for the district is the state transit assistance, and the second line is the local transportation fund. I can see the title got a little offset.
No, I think I understand now. So you're basically, you're showing how each of the dollars that were assigned, I guess, to each jurisdiction, how you laid them out programmatically. Right. Okay, I understand.
There is some rearranging between the fixed route and the administration. There was a number of ways in which the budget was restructured from the current year on administration and fixed route. That, and so it's not really... It's best to look at those both together, really, if you're trying to get a, an idea of the change from year over year rather than looking at them separately. I want to say that the overall impact of being of the increase, as you notice, the budget didn't grow by very much. We are growing the amount of fortunately, we have the growth in the STN, the LTF. What this is allowing us to do is to reduce our reliance on a diminishing surplus from prior years. So the current year budget relied on $2.6 million of accumulated fund balance that had grown in prior years, but was not necessarily a sustainable source if we were trying to, balance with $2.6 million every year from surplus. That wouldn't work for very long. So this budget actually uses zero fund balance to balance the budget. It does still use $1 million of CARES Act funds, which is also not a permanent source. So it's sort of reduced our non-recurring sources from 2.6 million to a million. It isn't reduced down to zero, but right. Then again, that's part of what the CARES Act is for, is to be able
to help bridge that gap, right? And that's kind of what I was getting at is sort of where did the jurisdiction, or the STA dollars come in? Where did the CARES Act money kind of fit into that? Because I think what I voiced at the last meeting was a concern over a period of time when the CARES Act money runs out, right? So you're basically using the carryover from prior years, what did you say, 2.6 million?
In the current year, 21-22, yes.
Right, into next year. Plus CARES Act money, and then that allows you to take kind of the foot off the pedal for these dollars coming out of jurisdictions. Yeah. So my question, while I'm fine with kind of the approach, I just want to make sure I understood it, is I'm also kind of sticking a flag into the kind of the 3 to 5 year projection out when the CARES Act money goes away, and what's the model look like then, and how do we project out revenue expenses, because in here we're also increasing, and I agree with it, you know, the increase in cost of living and whatever else we're doing, which is keeping expenses overall we're down, but again, it's just I'm trying to get to that point where we're able to manage it now, and just want to make sure we're thinking about if there's systemic changes we will need to make in 2, 3, 4 years this board's ready to do it.
It's a very good question. I had originally hoped to have a 5-year plan as part of this budget. I think after talking with Autumn and others, it really felt like we needed to complete our capital plan to really do that responsibly, because there are choices as to how much of the different funding streams we have could meet the capital needs and the operational. It really would be good to look at them together. We could have balanced this budget without CARES Act by retaining more of the local transportation fund. That would have meant hardship on the part of the jurisdictions. It would have meant reduced. But even if that had just been kept flat at the jurisdictional level, it could have balanced the YCTD budget if we had used all of the increase. And so part of it does depend on whether there are future increases in the state funding that may in fact start to close the gap if you wanted to stay at current service levels. I mean, the other piece of this, it's such an interesting discussion, is also whether there are future operational changes that the board would like to fund from the SDA and LTF that is available, as well to put into the mix. And so what in fact are the desired, operational requirements, also has to fit into that plan. So it's absolutely essential that we do that. And, it should be part of the 10-year capital planning, this operational outlook.
Well, I'm not trying to slow this process down. I think the thought process is the right one in terms of trying to get to this balanced budget, trying to understand what our capital needs are. But I think it is something. Once this exercise is completed, to get to that is we're going to have to start projecting out those things, right? Not wait. I mean, it's never going to be right. Right? It's going to be you're going to at some point put a stake in the ground and say, okay, this is what it is, and prioritize your capital projects. Look at your overall kind of annual budgeting process and see where you stand. So again, I'm just. Yeah. I appreciate the discussion that we're even having it, but I would just, for the board to think about, in the September, October timeframe, would it be logical then to come back and look at sort of, okay, not so much from a kind of, we got to balance the budget and get into place by a time certain at the end of the fiscal year, but to certainly look at it from, are the things we need to be start thinking about? Because even if, to your point, any changes, any discussion about increases in service or decreases in service, how does that impact us in future years? We won't know. We got to know, first of all, right? We're always going to be kind of stuck in this kind of circle. We don't even know what our choices could be and the impact it would have without understanding that. So it's something we've been asking about for a few years now. And I understand we've been through changes and everybody's new here, but it's just something I want to make sure we find time to concentrate on. So.
If I can jump in on that, Director Ledesma, because, I'm right there with you, and Leo will tell you in our first conversations, but I said, we were starting on the budget, I was like, I want to make sure we have a five-year outlook as part of this. But then realizing as we kind of got into it and understanding that, in our conversations with the various jurisdictions, understanding that money was being set aside for certain capital projects, whether it was purchase of new buses or a new transit center for Woodland, these kind of commitments that had been made in prior year budgets that had not been approved, and that we realizing that we had made these commitments in prior year budgets, we hadn't implemented these things, and that there's all this unfinished business out there in terms of money that we've been setting aside and not actually implementing those projects, and that there is not a 10-year plan or any kind of plan for when we intend to complete those projects and spend those funds. Because again, some of those funds are, not set aside for, but are, were allocated by different jurisdictions as part of their 5307 or their STA. And so understanding those commitments that have been made and saying, what is the actual cost of implementing these and what funding do we have to even be, as down payments on those? Those are all the questions that I wanted to make sure I was able to answer before we could confidently say, here's where we're going to be. But one thing I felt was really important to do, and I just wanted to draw everyone's attention, and maybe you can go to this page, and that's on page 49, section 3 of the budget, is that it shows the available prior year fund balances and grant allocations. So this is really an accounting of the funding that is quote-unquote on the books or that we are eligible for. It includes, just sorry, you went a little too far. I think I just saw it. Page 49. It's not a table.
It's after this table.
It's after this table. I'm sorry, you didn't go too far. A little bit further. Next, here we go. There it is. There it is. So this shows all of the prior year fund balances and grant allocations that are available. So this includes our unrestricted fund balance of $4 million, some 5.7 in an allocated Woodland Urbanized Area 5307 funds, which were targeted again for some capital projects, about $5 million in CARES Act funding that we're eligible for that has not been allocated, $2.6 million in SAC-UZA. These are, again, recovery funds for SAC-UZA, which is West Sacramento. And then another million from the Sacramento UZA and CRISA funds. These are different colors of recovery funds. And then accumulated LCTOP. LCTOP is a state program, which can be used for purchasing buses. So these are the dollars that we are aware of that are, again, on the books or we're eligible for, that we're using that as the starting point as we look at our capital improvement plan, understanding, how much of these funds do we want to set aside for capital improvements, and then which funds are available to support operations, and how does this then all feed into that bigger picture over the 5 years of where are we going to be when all this one-time funding goes away. So I wanted to just highlight that section for you all, which is, I think...
I'm sorry, Lucas, I know you have your hand up. I'm sorry, but... as a follow-up to that, so on these unused, because you said something that, I didn't realize with these funds. So these are unallocated at this point, and then I heard you say that they don't have that the decision will be, can they be used for either capital project or for operating budget, are you saying you're going, are they already designated to go towards that, or would that be the choice policy discussion for the board?
That's what the board is going to have to decide. So some of these funds are restricted, have restricted uses, others are unrestricted. But that's exactly why I want to do a capital improvement plan with the board, with the input from the member jurisdictions, to talk about things like bus purchases, a new transit center for Woodland, some of these, again, things that have been kind of piecemeal one at a time included in prior year budgets, but we've never actually, to my knowledge, I haven't seen a document that takes a comprehensive look at what the priorities are for capital projects and decides which funds we want to allocate to them.
Okay. Thank you. Appreciate the time on this.
Mm-hmm. Very good. Mr. Ferricks.
Yeah, thanks so much. A couple quick questions with regard to sort of the draft here. So one, I would really appreciate the possibility of putting the slides back up that sort of talk about the Route 44. I that went pretty quickly, and I was trying to read the budget draft budget memo and the draft budget itself, as well as also trying to watch the slides. So apologies there. Yeah, I really appreciate seeing that. And I don't know if that's possible for us to get the slide presentation, potentially either in advance of the meetings or something, it'd be really helpful. So it's nice to be able to read a copy of it.
I think you were talking about slide 10.
I don't remember which slide it was. I apologize. So
No, I think you wanted to talk about the 44. Yes.
Yes, please.
Oh, sorry. No, that was it. Sorry, Mimi. Slide 10. There it is. Did you have a specific question? Or do you want me to say a bit more about it?
Yeah, I do, actually. Well, I have a couple questions and I'd love for your response. I mean, I think firstly, I guess the, let's see. Firstly, so I'm looking at the draft memo and then the rest of the sort of the draft budget, and I don't see the elimination of the 44 in there. So that just want to check in on that firstly.
Yeah, correct. So the 44 is included in the draft budget. And we wanted to highlight that for you. So if we were to eliminate it, that would be a reduction of approximately $150,000 from the budget okay. that is currently in front of you.
And the comments that came from the CAC were essentially, as I recall you saying them, if Yellow Bus does not, if Yellow Bus eliminates the 44, then Yellow Bus does not serve South Davis. And then there was something after that, though, so I wasn't quite.
Yeah, so it was the combination of eliminating the 44 and the rerouting of the Route 42. So the Route 42 yes. is no longer going to serve South Davis.
Right, that's correct, yes.
And so that's where the comment was made, I think, that, you know, to eliminate both creates yeah. a burden on South Davis.
Yeah. Okay, yeah, thanks. I appreciate that, and I agree with that. The issue of, so the route 211 and 212, and that's the sort of the those are also mentioned though, in the sort of the annual operating budget sort of, discussion. I mean, so here on that slide, it says they are, oh yeah, that they're preserved for a full year, but I mean, there's a variety of places in there says that we're going to be eliminating them in fit and then while also starting the microtransit. So, I mean, I just am not, there seems to be a little bit of.
I'm sorry. I think what this slide is doing is saying these are some options that are different than what's currently in the budget. So, and I didn't make that clear. I am not at my best right now.
No, that's okay. really yeah. Apologize. We're good. I'm tracking. I'm just trying to get the clarification.
Yeah. What's in the draft budget document is elimination of the 211 and the 212 when the microtransit starts. So we have them for 6 months and then they go away. So this option that's here on the slide would be an alternative, which would be to keep them for the full year pending the results of the planning study. Because again, we are launching mm-hmm. a planning study to plan the microtransit in Woodland. And part of that is to look at the local service and what the local service, if any, should be retained. So if we were to keep that service for the full year, it would add an additional $260,000 to the budget we have in front of you.
Got it. Thank you. That's helpful. And then a couple of additional questions. If we can go back to the actual board packet now, it would be helpful on this. That would be really appreciated. I have, I would say the next question actually would probably be just about the memo, the draft memo from you to the board, I think would be, which is, it is page 33. It's page 33 in the board packet. I don't know. Might not be. It's your memo from, the draft memo from.
Keep going up, bottom.
Okay. I think my page numbers are.
Yeah, oh, yeah.
There we go.
Yep. There we go. Yeah. Thanks so much. So I think the comment in this, and so thank you for the clarification, Autumn, with regard to the routes and the proposed sort of shifts and changes there and elimination and such. The point would be, I think, just that, in terms of the overall memo highlights, I would say also, I wouldn't be afraid to talk about the eliminations, right? I mean, as an example, everything in this list that you have here is like really positive. Like, yes, this is all great. And that is good. But there's also potential proposed elimination of, 211 and 212. But again, after the microtransit, which is a positive thing, happens, there's also, again, I think I appreciated the clarification on the Route 44 and not being proposed currently for elimination. But for example, if it is eliminated, I think that it's perfectly acceptable to put it as part of a highlight of, things that are happening as part of the budget. I mean, cause, some people view efficiencies and, saving of dollars as highlights. So, I think that we should be willing to sort of list those types of things as well. So just a sort of editorial comment there, I think. And then it's page 34 of the packet. So let me go down and, it is the top of the page says administration operating budget.
You just passed it.
Yep. A little further up. Yeah. Okay. That page right there. Thank you so much, Amy. It's item subsection D. So I obviously, yes, I've seen the staffing chart, the proposed staffing chart that is, there's a reference to table 1.1B. So it references in this section, a new senior transportation planner. So just want to be clear that, so we've currently have been at 2 and we are proposing to go to 3. Is that correct? Okay. because we've just had a new additional senior transportation planner join within the past couple of months. And so just kind of wanted to just get a clarification on that sort of proposed change in the staffing.
Yeah, and just to clarify, if I may, so we are basically moving around existing resources. So we have basically what's been a vacant position in the TransDev contract.
Okay.
So we're kind of pulling that back in, pulling in that money. And then the procurement and grant specialist position, which we have been unable to fill, and that we've realized as we've taken a look at it, we can kind of break that apart. So we're essentially taking those two positions and repurposing it into a new senior transportation planner, and then the assistant planner. So if it makes sense, we're not pulling in new resources. These are existing resources that we're shifting around.
Yeah, that makes sense. Yeah. No, thank you. I appreciate that. Just wanted that clarification. And then the last question is just on the next page. So scrolling down, and it is subsection D again. Right there, per agreement with the YTMA. So I just wanted to highlight that. So appreciate this item about, you know, the $30,000, that was previously designated, to support the staff time will be redirected to programming. I think that's very important, first and foremost. But secondly, I really think that this is a real opportunity for additional revenue. I think it's, you know, the YOLO, Transportation Management Association, I think has been woefully, underutilized and or under-resourced and under, you know, sort of basically not much attention paid to it. And so I think there's a lot of opportunities for, in terms of, YCTD to, sort of make that an additional revenue generator, and not for purposes of clearly funding staff or whatever, but for actually putting into programming. And so I do just would like to see some sort of, you know, I mean, I know it's probably in the mix of in someone's wheelhouse for their responsibilities, but, you know, I do think that that is a really important area of potential revenue generation that we currently have not been really going after. Thanks for all the work on this draft budget. Appreciate it.
Thank you, Mr. Frerich. Are there any other questions from board members? I'll make I have one question area and I want to make a comment. I think what we're seeing here is a far more robust and transparent assessment of the financial operations of this district than we have seen in the past. And a part of that is when we see the unallocated funds that with some indication of some prior commitments that have not been documented in any coherent fashion, we're seeing it's good. This is a good move for us, and I do think that that's the slide that talked about the items that are under consideration but have not yet been decided or built into the budget. I think some of that information came out subsequent to the package, and so it's a way of reflecting again improved transparency. Here's some areas of sensitivity in the future statistical calculations of our budget. Here's some risk factors that we need to take a look at and be aware of. So I think I'm really, really pleased with the package. I do have the same question that Director Dulcich raised on the authority to transfer funds from one function to another. And I think So my question is what is it that we're trying to what's the problem we're trying to fix with that? And I am generally inclined towards some way of containing those transfers. And for example, could be that a problem might occur at some point where excess amounts of funding is transferred from operations to administration. That'd be a concern. So I think you might want to have some kind of percentage limit or something to give us all some assurance that generally what we're approving in the budget is what's going to happen.
Certainly I can think of some ideas to bound it. Just to give an example of the kind of thing that this allows for is when there were some major staff vacancies, mm-hmm. and there was some contracted spending instead of labor spending, that would be something that could move forward quickly without necessarily requiring a resolution by the board to move money between those line items. Another way perhaps of doing it is to say that within each of the budgets that are mentioned, there's the flexibility. So within the administration budget, within the fixed route budget, paratransit and microtransit. And then perhaps also the budget does include an overall contingency line item of $250,000. And perhaps you could just bound it and say that contingency may be applied by the executive director if there's a need of. But part of it was just to clarify, I felt like when you were approving the budget, I actually didn't know when I came in whether we were restricted by each line item in the budget that was displayed for the current year or whether it was approved as a not to exceed overall budget, because there wasn't a resolution that said what was required in terms of the control on the budget. And so this is trying to establish that. But again, I think perhaps putting it within that 250,000 limit that if there's a need to exceed materials and supplies, but there's savings in contracted spending, that wouldn't be considered a violation, and it wouldn't require a board action to move money around between those kinds of things.
Well, I think we're always balancing the flexibility and appropriate need for the executive director to be able to manage the organization. So that is a value that we should hold high. We also hold a value of accountability and transparency. And so I think there's probably a little more thinking on this one. I don't object personally to have some increased flexibility, but I think it is wise to have it be clear in what the limits are and what the purposes are and so on.
And if I may, again, that was the reason behind the specified dates to come back to the board, that each budget status report at the quarterly level would show if there was any line item that was expected to exceed its
budget. I probably want something a little more than that. And with there, every one of us works in a number of agencies where we have the same problem and or the same consideration.
Yeah.
There are some parameters for the amounts or percentages, and we don't want to hamstring people, but we do want to have some check-in. More than just a, this is what we did. Okay. Well, that's some feedback. And I think we do have at least one public comment. Are there any, before I turn to that, any other questions from anybody? Okay. So let's go to public comment. We have one hand raised, and then I think we also have some written comment that we'll hear from in just a minute. So I don't see a name, but is that Mr. Hirsch? Is that you? Is that Mr. Hirsch again?
Yes, it is.
Well, thank you, Alan. So you'll have three
thank
minutes.
You. This is wonderful. This budget is much improved. I know we're doing some new stuff here, so this is great. And I also appreciate that we're increasing the budget, reflecting about the dramatic need to mode shift from away from driving to transit to reduce our greenhouse gases. But we need to see a massive shift. I know the yellow bus shouldn't get more money than it can use effectively, but I think we need to see even more shifts of this nature, 10 and 20 and 30% a year in budget increases. And we need to see even to see 10, 20, 30, 50% increases in ridership. So and I know maybe this a bridge too far this year, but I see cost control and cost forecasting running by buses. I don't see any efficiency numbers like cost per revenue mile, cost per trip mile. Don't see any of those ratios in there because measure efficiencies. I maybe this is too far at this particular thing. I know we're doing some new stuff here, but we should put a pin on that for next year. I don't see any program goals that we can measure. We can measure cost. We don't see any measuring results. In a public sector, you would have not just manage the cost, but you'd measure the results, meaning sales. It also would be profit. I mean, there's no profit in a nonprofit, of course, but we should measure the results in terms of how many trip miles, cost per trip miles, and those sorts of things. And I don't see any of that here, any budgets on that, so we can track our progress against our goals. So especially when we're shifting mode shift from fixed route to microtransit, we should be watching to see whether our cost per trip, cost per mile, how that's changing and whether we're optimizing. Because one of the goals is to use our public funds as much as possible to reduce DMT, cost per trip mile. to reduce our greenhouse gas. That's really important. And there's no metric here that measures that, even approximate. So this is great. This is wonderful. Thank you, Mr. Levinson. I'm glad you're on board. And this is a great question. Thank you very much for this progress.
Thank you, Alan. Are there any other public comments? Mimi, I think we have at least one written comment that's been received. Would you like to just make note of that?
Yes, we received one written public comment from Mr. Barnbaum, and it was regarding the first bullet point for item number 5 related to the long-awaited expansion of Route 42 A and B. And the public comment was forwarded to all board members.
Right. Was there another comment? You did send
us. It's regarding a separate item.
Okay, separate topic. Very good. All right, very good. Autumn, this is not for action. Do you have any closing comments?
Yeah, I want to thank the board for this discussion, and I think we've heard some really good feedback, and definitely work on looking at some good examples of how we strike that right balance that you spoke of, Chair Saylor, regarding flexibility and also accountability. And so appreciate that conversation, and also the clarifying questions and areas we want to make sure we communicate clearly about this budget as we go forward.
All right, and we see further need for projecting for long-term sustainability, and I thought that was a very good conversation as well. Director Lauren.
Sorry to be so late to the game with comments, but as I was listening to Autumn's comments and also the public comment, if we are going to be an agency that just looks at vehicle miles traveled and what the savings are per trip, I think that would leave us at a disadvantage while looking at equity and how we're serving people. So I just think that depending on one financial indicator isn't enough to serve the public. So I just think we have to look, really across the board on our values when we're looking at how we sift through information. And I know that this board prioritizes that. So just that's it. Those are my 2 cents. Thank you.
2 cents worth a dollar. Thank you. Very good. I think we're ready to move to the next item. And that is, I think it's that item 6 is the next one. Is that right?
That's right. That is the Yolo Managed Lanes update, and that is me. So we'll go ahead and dive into that. So you have in your packet a staff report and then a letter that was sent to Caltrans District 3 last week. So I just wanted to take this opportunity to kind of share what's been happening and answer questions and hear feedback from the board, on the direction that we've been moving with this project. So since the full board conversation that we had was in January, and then since that time, the ad hoc committee has continued to meet approximately monthly and also to meet fairly regularly, not entirely monthly, with Caltrans District 3 leadership. And the kind of primary requests, there's two that I'll really touch on, but the primary request that you see captured in the letter is around the project description. As the board knows, we are in this stage with this project where the environmental review process has begun. A draft environmental document is expected at the end of this year. And the first step in the environmental process is the issuance of a notice of preparation, which is where you describe the project and send notice to the public that that an environmental review is going to be done. And what we have been talking with Caltrans about is revising that project description, revising that notice of preparation to make sure that we have the right project described as we enter the CEQA process. And what our direction, what our request to Caltrans, who is the lead agency under CEQA for this project, is that they identify the tolled lane as the preferred alternative. Right now, the project description talks about managed lanes, and then it has a number of different alternatives, one of which is tolling or two of which are tolling, different versions of tolling. We're asking them to have tolling as the preferred alternative, recognizing that the CEQA process, you don't always land on your preferred alternative. As you go through the process, you might end up having one of the other alternatives become the project. But that is what we've suggested. We think the toll revenue should be used to support transit service and a transportation equity program, and that should be spelled out again in the project description. We think that they should be evaluating a multi-lane toll facility as a viable alternative. In other words, in addition to adding a new lane, having a conversion of a general purpose lane, so that we would actually end up in a situation where we have two toll lanes, that should be looked at as a viable alternative. And that climate change, VMT reduction, and transportation equity should all be identified in what's called the purpose and need of the project, which again is kind of part of the standard notice of preparation. And finally, that the project description should also include specific mention of infrastructure to speed up transit, like that was included in our application to the TRCIP, the Transit and Intercity Rail Program application that YCCD submitted in partnership with Caltrans in February of this year. So that is the request. And then on the next slide is the kind of the other issue that we have been talking about internally and also in conversation with Caltrans is clarifying YCTD's roles and responsibilities in this project. So Caltrans is the lead agency under CEQA. However, YCTD is the project applicant for both the $86 million federal infra grant, which we received in 2021, and the TRCIP grant that we applied for $20 million just several months ago. So we clearly have an important role to play in this project, but there are no kind of formal agreements between YCTD and Caltrans. So we are working to establish a formal memorandum of understanding between YCTD and Caltrans that clarifies where YCTD leads, where we participate, how we kind of understand what our role is and how we relate to Caltrans as we go through this process together. So I've listed here some of the areas of responsibility that have been a part of our conversation, and this is a place where I would love to hear the board's feedback. So again, oversight of grant funds that have been received. Clearly, we have a very clear role for that because it's our name on those, and so we're ultimately on the hook for ensuring those funds are spent the way we said they were going to be spent. Closing the funding gap, we still do have a funding gap for this project, and so looking at the various funding strategies and going after funding, the Caltrans can't do this project without us out there advocating for it and advocating for those funds. Stakeholder and community engagement, we think YCTD's got an important role to play there. The structure of YCTD makes us a good fit by virtue of our structure to engage with various the agencies here in Yolo County and the communities. Coordination with Solano County around some of the issues that we see with 80 at the 113 interchange at the county line. That's an important piece of the puzzle when we look at what's happening on this corridor in Yolo County. You can't ignore the Solano County side of the equation. Reviewing and concurring with major documents. These are environmental documents and other decision-making documents. What is YCTD's role in reviewing, concurring, and approving those documents? And then the last two are very kind of much broader, looking at, if we move forward with toll lanes on this project, what is the tolling authority? What is the structure through which tolling is actually administered, not just here in Yolo County, but more broadly in the Sacramento region? And then how are future toll revenues spent? And what is, again, YCTD's role if we do indeed move forward with a toll lane on 80, we may very well be the first toll lane in the Sacramento region. And so what precedent are we establishing around how toll revenues are spent in a way that is aligned with our goals? So that is the presentation. I think we can stop sharing, or we can, keep those up if you want to refer to them. But at this point, I'd love to open it up for your questions and comments and feedback, on both the two pieces we presented here about what our roles and responsibilities are, and also how we kind of proceed moving forward with our request to Caltrans.
So in this case, I think that there's an ad hoc committee that has been engaged as well. So I'd like to start by allowing the ad hoc committee to make any comments. The one opening I'd like to mention is that the board did approve a set of goals for this project, and that has been before us at every turn. So I think that the letter that you see and the comments that Autumn has made I see as consistent and aligned with that formative, that foundational board action and direction. Let's see, Matt, do you have anything that you'd like to add or questions as a member of the ad hoc, and then we'll turn to Chris.
I think most of what I might add is kind of recapturing what Autumn mentioned. And the things I would highlight are how unique this project is. This would be, if we're successful, the first tolling project in the region. So that makes it really different, and for large agencies to embrace something different and kind of put it into a standard process, it's hard. And I think that's a lot of what we're seeing in Autumn's summary and in the upcoming steps are some of these things that are harder to work on because there's not a template. It's things we need to figure out and really test and be creative and see if there's win-win solutions. And I think the ad hoc committee with Kirk Trost's help and our SACOG partners, we're really trying to navigate those rapids and find those win-wins. So I think that's one item. And then the other item that's really unique is the equity layer, and bringing that into a large transportation project is different. And it's really looking like the future of transportation and the future of transportation planning needs to have that equity layer, but it's not been something that many projects have had in the past. And it's not been something that new and innovative projects, large projects have had in the past. So again, it really is interesting to work on, and bringing all of this together is hard work. So thanks to Autumn and the ad hoc members and Kirk Trost for really pushing this forward. But that's the key. Those are the keys that I would mention. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Matt. Chris, any comments?
No, I think both Autumn and Matt kind of summed up kind of where the journey thus far. And I kind of walk away with a little bit of what Matt said at the end. This is a bit uncharted for this district, period. Not to stay on the journey theme. We're just kind of on this new journey of a brave new world of working on a major project in Northern California, a unique one, as Matt said, in the region, right here in Yolo County. And I think as, the thing that's always tricky for me as I'm trying to think about this is, first of all, this something at this scale that this board worked on, I couldn't fathom this a year or two ago, right? That we would be dealing at this level, but kudos to Autumn and the colleagues, or all of you, first of all, but colleagues on the ad hoc committee and Kirk and others that are supporting it, because it is important that there's local leadership here. That is my takeaway from all of this. It would be very easy to let Caltrans just kind of roll. And not that they're nefarious in any way. It's just the way things are, sometimes can happen. And we are most definitely trying to imprint our values, things we've been talking about the last few years, about the way we want to move forward. So it is important that we think about these things going forward. We're trying to represent those as best we can, and trying to insert ourselves in those points of view where maybe the prevailing sort of thought at Caltrans, or there's just the way the process goes, get us the weight of it could take over. So I'm very cautious. I will say this in thinking about kind of what is our role, what is, I'm very cautious about sort of trying to become the Caltrans. We're, that's not, we are not the project manager here. And so when you put up the list, Autumn, of things you're thinking about reviewing the documents and whatever else, I know myself, like my colleagues have busy day jobs, and some of you mentioned these are volunteer jobs. They, on a good day, they're volunteer jobs. And this is not an area of expertise for us. So we just got to understand that we're here to represent our county, our individual cities, and how this impacts the entire district. And so it's just a thought that I'm trying to keep in my head, that we can't we can only manage the parts we can control the best, or the parts that we would influence the best. And I think so far, thanks to the Autumn really for the work she's doing and trying to carry this. And it's been really an important part of what we do. So
thank you, Chris. Let's turn. Thanks, Jesse and Lucas for allowing us to go through this. And I think you, both of you know this project, you know what we're doing, but I want to make sure that if you have any questions or comments that you have opportunity to be fully engaged. Jesse?
I had to get my mouse on the right screen there. I want to really applaud the ad hoc committee and especially Autumn for her leadership on this. And I know that it's hard work for everyone, but for Caltrans, I think that they're really good at what they do, and they're good at engineering and they're good at building, but and that's like part of their role. But our role is leadership. Our role is leadership. It's equity. It's long-term planning for our communities. And I think that we just have to continue to lead on this and have the courage to lead on this. So I just want to ask the ad hoc committee and Autumn, just keep going. Thank you.
Thanks, Jesse. Lucas.
Yeah, a few points. Thanks. I appreciate all the work of the committee. And I really do. I think the letter that was sent in is fantastic. I'm really, you know, I think it captures a lot of the things that we've been discussing. And I think in points that we really want to see sort of move forward. You know, I mean, there's been a variety of discussions where, you know, even in like recently in the, at SACOG and that and sort of the mega region working group discussions where, you know, there's been discussions around in the three sort of, MTC sort of Bay Area, San Joaquin COG and San Joaquin County, and then also SACOG in our 6 county region at how, there, this is, you know, the sort of the concept of managed lanes and particularly the tolling infrastructure is something that has been in place in other parts of the state for a significant amount of time now. And it's continuing to be a real sort of, frankly, the way forward. I mean, it's not, you know, there's not just a lot of like, you know, lane expansions without actual sort of tolling infrastructure being also accompanying those lane expansions. And so I think that that's something that I think is very important to note. It's also interesting that, you know, this, that's basically an established policy coming from Caltrans headquarters, I mean, in Sacramento. So, you know, statewide Caltrans headquarters is saying this is the, sort of the policy. So, I think that is, in my opinion, that is what, that's exactly what we should be doing with this project. I do think it's a time for us to start to engage our legislative partners and just in terms of in informational briefings. I mean, we have not had a discussion with Congressman Garamendi, Congressman Thompson, Congresswoman Matsui anytime recently about this item. In terms of updates, regular routine updates and two-way communication with all of these offices and also Senator Dodd, Assemblymember Aguiar Curry, you know, as an example, I think are really needed just to keep them in the loop of what's happening and sort of the progress that's occurring. You know, I think that I think all of them would benefit from hearing sort of the work that's being done and sort of steps and progress along the way. And so just encourage Autumn to sort of seek out just an informational briefings with all of our various state and federal elected officials. Thanks.
Thank you, Lucas. Very good suggestion. I do think that this is one of the 12 mega region priorities. It's a significant corridor for our region. The partnership that we have with Caltrans is quite unique in this situation. And it's one that I do see it as a partnership. And we are, we're going through some conversations that need to happen. And we obviously can't build it. And we can only do this together. So with that, we're going to go to public comment. But, Mr. Chris Holomart, is it? One message that I hope that you hear is that we do see this as a partnership in service of our shared region. And I think together we can do something really pretty amazing, including bringing the additional resources necessary to complete the vision that we arrive at together. That's one of the key things that we bring as a resource and an asset to the overall picture. And we have a public comment that we'll listen to and look forward to. And is this Mr. Hirsch? I think it is. Alan, is that you who's there again? Is that you?
I am. Thank you. Thank you very much, Don. This is a very impressive letter. Thank you. I'm enthusiastic about your being more assertive in terms of projecting our local values on this project. I think it's important. And because, of course, this project is actually much more than just Yolo County. It's the choke point on the Tahoe connection. And as we see more people driving to Tahoe, more snow is melting. There's a contradiction. There's an internal contradiction to basically contributing to more driving up Tahoe, which is one of the problems here. In terms of I'm glad you're addressing the VMT induction. That's the key environmental things. And all the money the total money that gives to equity will not make up for VMT increases. That's not okay. I know we were we had an equity issue we addressed equity in the San Mateo County toll lanes there. And I will note that basically the revenue generated from those toll lanes could give money to one half of 1% of San Mateo County. That's the social equity from the toll lanes. The toll that will not begin to undo the greenhouse gas generated from the additional capacity on that thing. We need to reduce VMT. I sent you some slides with a number of suggestions, creative suggestions, things that maybe are a little bit out of the box. For example, like maybe putting solar panels over the bike lanes might pay for itself. There's 32 miles of that in Korea. Things like maybe using the social equity money to put chargers for electric cars at apartment buildings, retrofit, so those people have access to electric cars and aren't stuck paying $5 and $6 of gas. Things like putting bus stops next to the I-80 project. Items for the buses, express buses can run and stop and not have to get into the local streets. We actually have some bus service for the entire corridor, not just the short segment we're widening here. I think we need to think of it corridor-wise. I think the corridor should include all the way down to Solano County and maybe into Benicia and further. And it should go all the way to Tahoe. Maybe e-bikes at the end of the corridor or along the corridor so people can ride the causeway with e-bikes. Or when people can take a bus and then get an e-bike at the end of these things. I think we need to be creative here with that extra toll money. This letter is wonderful. Thank you very much. Let's be creative. Let's be assertive. This is new stuff. We are in a crisis both for climate, and we need to do all we can. Thank you for showing leadership on this.
Thank you, Alan. Appreciate those comments. Are there any other public comments? I don't see any other people present. Is there any written comment that we've received on this topic?
We do not have any written comments on this topic.
All right. Jesse, your hand is up.
Yeah, I would just like to ask if this would be something that you as chair, Don, and Autumn can possibly take as writing a letter to the local electeds that are regional and taking that on after this meeting, maybe just as an update, letting them know, you know, where we are and what we're doing. I like Lucas's point. I think it was well said, and I think that's an action that should be taken. It should be the chair in Autumn.
All right. Well, let's take a look at how the timing and the content of that. But that's a good suggestion to make sure that our colleagues are informed about what we're doing here. So let's both our other local colleagues, I think is what you're saying, Jesse, as well as. Is that what you're suggesting, or do you mean the state representatives and federal representatives of our region?
Well, I think Director Frerich's point was really solid, letting the assembly members know the people that can really help us also with funding. Let them know where we are.
Yeah, I think we'll probably do something in addition to letter. I think we'll probably do some outreach and briefings. Yeah,
if I could. Add on to that, Mr. Chair, I think that the federal officials getting an update of where we are too would be a bad idea.
I think that was definitely the suggestion. Yes.
Yeah, I want to make sure.
And including Congressman Matsui. Absolutely. Right. Yes, and who I absolutely agreed.
Right. Yeah, I think that's right, and I think that's a good charge to the ad hoc that we can we can work with Autumn and make sure that those, that that outreach takes place. We may ask some of you for some additional support on that, but thank you. Autumn, do you have what you, I think this is, we come to a conclusion. I appreciate the conversation here, and I think we're on the way.
I want to thank everyone for your comments.
Very good. Brings us to item 7, Yolo Active Transportation Corridors. Brian Abinat is listed as our presenter. I'm glad to be able to say that out loud. Brian Abinat.
Good evening, Sarah Taylor and directors. It's nice to present to you for the first time. I arrived in early March. And we'll get into that in, a little bit later, but I have a handful of slides here to share with you all related to the Yolo Active Transportation Corridors project, which you've all are most likely aware of, and I've been sort of waiting to hear about, you know, what progress has been made on it. We're not asking for any action from the board this evening, but just to give you an update, let you know what we've been doing and how we plan to approach the project. So if you recall, last summer, YCTD applied for and was awarded $1.2 million federal RAISE grant award for the project that was previously titled Bike and Pedestrian Trail Network Planning. And so that was actually, the amount that we're being funded is really quite large by planning standards. But the, what's unique about this project, and I want to be, repeating what you already know, is that this wasn't just sort of a planning effort. This is also a design and engineering project for construction, and that's unusual for these types of projects, because usually those are sequential and they're usually distinct phases of a project. But nonetheless, it's introducing some challenges for us, but ones we think we can meet, and we're excited to see play out in this process. But one of the key factors that provided us with this funding from the federal government was, you know, our commitment to, you know, trying to address barriers for low-income and minority residents in terms of active transportation access and connectivity. So that's an important lens through which we'll be looking and approaching this project. Mimi, next slide. So, like I mentioned, the project was relatively dormant from the time that the award was announced to, say later this winter that just passed. And part of that's because the senior planner position that the board approved for this year's budget hadn't been filled and was always imagined to manage this project. And so when Autumn brought me on board and early March, in fact, today is my 2-month anniversary of my first day of work, that this was a project that I would be working on. And so this is one of the reasons why I wanted to join YCTD, was the opportunity to work on this project in I-80 and work in multimodal transportation planning and programming. One thing I did was I retitled the project from Bike and Pedestrian Trail Network Project to Yolo Active Transportation Corridors, with a clever acronym pronounced YAHTSE, because I felt like this new title better reflects what we're actually trying to accomplish with the project, which is creating functional, safe, comfortable, paved, off-street, multi-use paths for people to use by bicycle and by walking. And I felt like the other title kind of implied or could cause confusion that we were developing recreational, dirt paths and trails, and that's not what we wanted to communicate. So that's the motivation behind that, and that's the title we'll be using from this point forward. One of the first things that Autumn and I did was we started kind of thinking about how do we manage this process between, a planning process, but yet we're also doing design and engineering. Those are usually sequential, but we really want to be able to deliver a project in a reasonable time frame. So this flow chart that you see at the bottom of the slide kind of reflects what our thinking is. And right now, we're sort of in this project preparation phase where we're preparing to launch the project, and that'll occur, we hope, late summer, early fall. But we feel like it that, you know, somewhere in the early middle phase of the project that we'll have enough sort of patterns of input from community members in Yolo County for all of our outreach that we'll get a sense of what the top, you know, two or three corridors should be to move towards, you know, design and engineering. At that point, we can kind of split the project and they can run parallel with each other and actually sort of inform each other, which is something I've never done before. But I'd like to see how that can work, where sort of what we're learning through design and engineering can sort of perhaps inform the design guidelines for the plan, you know, for the final plan and future corridors that we would ultimately be implementing. And then perhaps policy ideas that are emerging from the planning process could help inform the design and engineering. So we'll see if that transpires, but that's kind of the thought at this stage. Mimi, next slide, please. So I've been here for 2 months, and first things that I've done was really dig into the files of the project, getting it set up, building outreach databases of, you know, public agency staff, non-governmental organizations, et cetera. But one of the most important things we've done is we've reconnected with all of your staff about this project. There was varying levels of awareness and depth of understanding of what this project was and what we're trying to accomplish with it. And so we've had really good conversations with them. I just wanted to share with all of you board members how impressed I was with the level of support and the interest and the enthusiasm that they've all had for implementing this project and the opportunities that they see that this project presents. And so those local agency staff will form sort of that technical advisory committee for the project that I'll be relying on to help guide the process and make sure that we're all moving forward together cohesively and collaboratively in ways that we all feel comfortable with. And I imagine that group will meet regularly, perhaps as frequently as monthly. I'm really pleased with the way that those initial conversations have gone. And then this week, we're doing something similar with non-governmental organizations where we're having focus groups. And they've sort of naturally grouped into different cohorts that you can see in the bulleted list there. But the purpose of this is to get, you know, really early input from, you know, from these different stakeholder groups that, you know, that the project can affect and to get a sense of, you know, give them, you know, some input on what the process can look like. And the questions that I, you know, intend to ask them are such as, you know, how do you feel like this project will influence or affect the constituencies that you represent or the people that you serve? You know, what are some things we should be thinking about from a process standpoint in terms of negotiating a scope of work with a consultant? We don't want to miss anything. We want to make sure that the process is reflective of the values of our communities. And then finally, how might they, you know, define a successful project? You know, what would a successful outcome of this process and even capital projects look like? So that's the input that I'm hoping to get. Distill that, and you know, that will help shape the request for qualifications that we will issue in forthcoming month or two. So maybe next slide, please. So that leads to kind of the next steps that we're moving into, having those focus group discussions. I'm drafting the RFQ as we speak, and so the input that we're getting from local agency staff, focus groups, will bring the draft RFQ to the Project Technical Advisory Committee, the Citizens Advisory Committee, and then as well as the board, hopefully as soon as next month's meeting, for your support and approval on the request for qualifications. At that point, we'll then release it and kind of go through the consulting team selection process, which I'll be relying on the Project Technical Advisory Committee to help with that as well, as, you know, sort of a team building effort as well. And then kind of lingering in the background is the need to execute agreement with Caltrans and FHWA. We haven't received a draft agreement from them yet, but as soon as we have that and we're able to iron out the details of that agreement, that will come to the board for approval as well. Mimi, next slide, please. Okay, and then this slide just shows sort of visually the key milestones that I've been mentioning throughout the presentation and how we get from kind of where we are now to, I'm hovering my cursor over here, but I imagine you can't see that because I think Mimi's got control over it, to September. Hopefully, by the time that we have negotiated a scope of work with a consulting team, we'll be able to build out this Gantt chart more so we have a better sense of what, the actual planning process will look like. But until then, you can just kind of use the flow chart that I provided in the earlier slide as just sort of a point of reference to what our thinking is from a time frame standpoint. Amy, I think that's going to be it, right? Yep. So that concludes my formal presentation. I'm happy to engage in any discussion or questions that you might have.
Thank you, Brian. It's good to see that you're digging in. Good to see the progress with the interactions with stakeholders and your timeline. Are there questions, friends? I'm not seeing any questions. Are there any public comments?
Director Lauren, may I have a question?
I'm sorry, I didn't see you.
Would it be okay to put the first page of the slide back up for a second, please? Okay, where is it?
Sorry.
No, I think
this one.
No. It was that one. I just noticed that the informal interviews with interagency staff seem to be missing UC Davis. And UC Davis is, generally, part of our board, even if they're not a voting member, it might be worthwhile to also considering UC Davis in that list. Thank you.
Good. Okay, very good. Well, with a roll of the dice, away we go. Oh, wait a minute. Mr. Frerichs has decided to open up.
Thank you so much. I just was going to add to Director Lauren's comment. I mean, specifically around that comment about UC Davis, I think a good example is just like the Russell Boulevard bike path. The city and the university most recently collaborated on the redoing of that entire bike path and both contributed dollars towards that project and land usage of land and also dollars. So I think it makes a really good sense for the university to continue to be involved in this process as we move forward.
Is there anybody who opposes that? I don't see anyone. Matt opposes it.
I was hoping for UC Davis Health, actually.
Yeah, I was hoping I could, maybe even vote on it. But no, I did want to appreciate the comment. And Deb, Brian and I can definitely check in the next week and kind of add that layer. That's no problem. And one thing I want to talk with Brian during that discussion is Dixon. Because maybe even discussing with Dixon this project is another connection that could be, if not formally, at least informally, part of the diagramming and the thinking about long-term connections into Yolo County. So definitely look forward to it, and thank you for the mention.
Very good. Very good. Thank you. Thank you, Jesse, Lucas, and Matt. Brian, I think you have you've launched your project, and we expect daily updates from now until the trails are done. Or monthly, maybe. Okay. Very good. Thank you, everyone. Autumn, do we have any other topics to discuss this evening?
I just wanted to make sure we didn't have any public comment on this item, Mr. Chair.
All right. Is there a public comment?
There are no public comments.
All right, very good. Need anything else, Autumn, before we adjourn?
Nothing for me, Mr. Chair. Thank you all for your attention. I know this was a long one. Try not to do this to you every month.
I think this was the kind of meeting that we want to have, a very robust, wide array of topics centered on the essential mission of our organization. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
And good job, everybody. Bye-bye. We're adjourned.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Good night, everyone.
Good night.
Thank you.